All righty. Good evening, everybody. I hope you are having a pleasant evening. We've got a call-in show tonight. If you are listening, this is, of course, not the dulcet tones of Babak Hayeri. I am J.D. Moore. I am joined, as always, by our co-host, Sirius. Babak is off gallivanting in Europe, so it's just going to be the two of us this evening. We're very excited to listen to y'all, as we're going to be talking about all the things that are happening with fall camp, the new coaches poll that's out, TV rights going on left and right. It's going to be a really exciting time tonight as we take your calls. So, Cirrus, before we go ahead and start taking some callers, I see that we've already got a couple of folks queued up. What's on your mind this evening?
What's this this call-in show thing that you're talking about? I don't think I've heard of that before.
You know, it's one of those things where we have some of our folks go ahead and request to join us. That'll be on the bottom left hand. If you are listening on the app, you can click that mic button, request to be on. We'll see you up in the queue. We'll let you on. We'll let you unmute. We'd like to hear from you and anything that you want to talk about with fall camp, with college football, anything else at all. We'd love to hear from you, be able to talk a little bit about college football. I know certainly, you know, we are getting really close to week zero. We're finally in the month of college football with these games starting up at the end of the month. And Cirrus, I mean, that coaches poll came out today, or not today, the other day. We had, no surprise, Alabama number one, Ohio State and Georgia and Clemson filling out that front four. But very interestingly enough, we saw Texas get a sole single vote. What was going on with that for the number one pick for the number 18 Texas Longhorns?
Oh, right. The call-in shows. We've had so many great guests that we haven't been able to do one of these in a while. The coaches poll, I mean, I think there's some opportunity here for a little bit of fuel for the fire for callers because, yeah, you know, it was Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, Clemson. Okay, this all makes sense. And then, yeah, Texas all the way down at number 18 getting a vote for first place in the poll, which is just, you know, I don't know what they were consuming when they made that vote, but it must have been something strong.
You know, looking through that list of coaches who are on that voters poll, I mean, there's a lot of things that strike out at me of who was that coach who voted Texas to be the number one team in the preseason. I think one of the first ones that immediately stick out is Nick Saban, you know, putting out a little bit of rat poison to say that, you know, Alabama is going to be taking on a number one team in the country. I don't know how much water that holds, but, you know, there's a bunch of other guys on there. You got two other University of Texas system guys. You got Jeff Traylor, who we had on a space not too long ago. He's the head man over at UTSA. You also got Dana Dimmel, who's over at UTEP, also in that University of Texas system. Perhaps one of those two guys put in that first vote. Sirius, I mean, when you think about coaches who might be the funniest coach who have put in that number one vote, who is that funniest coach for you?
I mean, I kind of enjoy the idea of Nick Saban, you know, like his poll being sponsored by a rat poison company, you know, just trying to like sow chaos into some locker rooms and create some media narratives that aren't talking about Alabama for once. Probably the Dana Dimmel UTEP one. Out of the three that you mentioned, I think that would be the one that's most hilarious because UTSA is coming in off quite a bit of a heater. And, I mean, UTEP's not doing badly, but they're not quite bringing the same amount of excitement in that UTSA is. So I think that, you know, just being like, Dana Dimmel's like, you know what? I'm going to swing for the fences and see, you know, just kind of like what chaos I can create and kind of some havoc into this. And who knows, maybe it'll work.
I think one of the other ones that I also really enjoy out of possible coaches who could have put that Texas vote number
is one. Is it Holgo?
Well, yes, obviously Dana Holgerson just being bored and deciding, hey, I'm going to do something hilarious on this, and I'm going to put in that number one vote. But other ones out there that I think would also be fascinating, of course, you've got Stan Drayton, who's now the head man at Temple. A lot of ties to the University of Texas, recently came to Temple from the University of Texas. I think that's obviously another interesting one. You got a couple of other Texas guys, too, whether that's Sonny Dykes over at TCU. You've got connections like Sonny Cumby, who's out at Louisiana Tech now, but, you know, just fantastic. Stint as the interim head coach over at Lubbock with the Texas Tech Red Raiders. But I, again, when I look at this, though, it's not even just, you know, that number one Texas vote. There's other striking things about this coach's poll as well. I think immediately one thing that jumps out to me is Louisiana State in the receiving votes category. The first time since 2000 that Louisiana State was not featured in a preseason coaches poll. What do you make of that situation?
Brian Kelly's setting records right out of the gate. What, I mean, that's what they brought him in there to do, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I'm sure, you know, we're seeing those recruiting rankings go up incredibly high for the Tigers right now. Brian Kelly is starting to make a little bit of a stride with that team. We'll see what happens when we're actually playing football. But I think it's going to be one of those fascinating things of, you know, for the first time in a while, Louisiana State a little bit under expectations. So we'll see what's going to happen there with Brian Kelly in his first year. I think one
you
of
know,
the
I- those.
Oh, go on,
when
go
it
on.
Comes to when it comes to recruiting, I'm always of the very firm opinion that it doesn't matter in June or July.
Correct.
Your big guys, you know, for the most part, they're not going to commit until November or December. They're going to go for, you know, the big final push, all the publicity that that's going to entail right at the very end, that last home stretch before they make their decisions public. Now with the early signing day, and it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to kind of fight over the recruiting rankings right now in the middle of summer, when maybe LSU could go on a tear and they're going to win like 10 or 12 games this year, or Brian Kelly could win 6 games. That's going to determine how his recruiting class finishes once we get to that first early signing day.
Oh, undoubtedly. And obviously with LSU, they're trying to make this statement after Ed Orgeron, you know, being released not that long after winning the national championship. When you have to make a big splash like that, surely you expect big results as well. And we all know that with LSU, the championship is going to be the goal. They've won it with 3 different head coaches in the last 20 years. And it's going to be a big role for Brian Kelly as he steps into that role as the head of the LSU Tigers. Right now, obviously, we're talking about everything that's going on with the coaches poll dropped earlier this week. But of course, this is a call-in show. If you want to go ahead and get up here on the mic and talk about anything you want with college football, go ahead into the bottom left of that app, request to come on board. We'll get you on and we'll answer some of your questions. Looking further into this coaches poll, I think one other thing that also strikes me as very interesting is Penn State also in the receiving votes category. What do you make of that after James Franklin gets this huge extension? And, you know, it typically is seen that they're supposed to be a Big Ten power, but they're missing out to, you know, folks like Houston, to Arkansas, to Ole Miss, Kentucky, even in that bottom top 20 to 25 rankings in that top 25 poll.
Well, I think we've talked about it before, past call-in shows, where this is kind of a make or break year for James Franklin. He's got that big contract extension, which has bought him time because no booster is going to be trigger happy right after signing that or putting up the money so that the AD can sign that. But at the same time, he needs to prove it that he's worth the money, and he needs to get the fan base excited again. Had a bit of a down year lately, and this is kind of where he needs to bounce back, especially with Michigan State on the rise. Michigan finally broke through that ceiling, and of course, Ohio State is always a contender. Speaking of Michigan State, here's one for you. NC State. We've talked before about how this could be the year for the Wolfpack. They're sitting pretty at 13, right between Oregon and Michigan State. What do you think about their chances to get it done in the chaos of the ACC?
Man, you know, the first thing that I always think of with North Carolina State is this is the one cursed program when it comes to college athletics. And I just want to know what it looks like when there's expectations for North Carolina State heading into this upcoming season. I mean, Devin Leary is going to be a fantastic quarterback for this upcoming year. Dave Doran got that bonus, even though their bowl game was canceled, getting that bonus for getting up to 10 wins, despite not being able to play in that bowl game. But I think you have a very favorable non-conference slate for North Carolina State. You've got East Carolina, and then you've got home games against Charleston Southern. You got UConn at home. You got Texas Tech on the road with Joey McGuire, first year head coach. I mean, those are all favorable matchups if you're North Carolina State. But of course, Joey McGuire, we had him on the show not too terribly long ago, and you got to be fired up if you're going to be part of that inaugural class with him out in Lubbock. But I mean, you start looking at that ACC lineup. I mean, yes, you're going to be at Clemson. You're going to be going to Mack Brown over in Chapel Hill. Those are going to be difficult games. You also draw Wake Forest this year, which again has also been on the rise recently. But I think especially with Devin Leary, I'm very excited to see what he's going to do at quarterback for North Carolina State. I'm very excited to see, you know, how these guys, especially filling in on that offensive line, Ikem Ikowonu, I know I probably just absolutely butchered that, was the first round draft pick who used to play left guard at North Carolina State, how they return that type of size and production on the offensive line is going to be incredibly fascinating to watch. But again, when you're looking at North Carolina State's schedule, their returning production, and what they've got available, I think 13 is a very interesting spot in that coaches poll. But I'm very curious to see what happens with North Carolina State with expectations heading into this season. Absolutely.
Hope is a dangerous thing, JD. Dangerous. And you mentioned them, but we'll go ahead and hit it while we're in the talking about the ACC. Wake Forest sitting right there at 19, just in between Texas, who with their number one vote, and Wisconsin.
Yes, I mean, Wake Forest, again, that's going to be another fascinating case to see if Dave Clawson's offense continues to produce the numbers that we keep seeing from Wake Forest. I think there's obviously certainly a void in the ACC, especially if Clemson throws out another season kind of similar to what we saw last year. Now, granted, I do believe that Clemson will be returning back to form. They will be returning back to their strengths. And I think they're going to be the team to beat. But Wake Forest, if they can find some way, especially with, you know, Pitt has lost Kenny Pickett and Jordan Addison. Miami, we're still trying to figure out what that's going to look like under their new administration. North Carolina State is going to be pretty stout. But Wake Forest, they're one of those teams that can definitely get in there. J.R. Henney, I see that you have come on board. What is on your mind today, friend?
Hey, how's it going? Basically, I got Maryland Terrapins making a championship run next year. What do y'all think?
I'll have what you're having.
I bet.
That is quite the bold prediction. Any particular reason you're feeling so strong in the Terps other than, you know, just general fandom?
Well, the receiving core is top two or three in the country. Talia, you know, he's still good. Still think he's got think he's gonna improve better than Tua, and you know, Locks is a good coach.
Well, I'll tell you what, I think for Maryland, one of their big things is we've seen Mike Loxley finally get a little bit of success. They've tasted what it's like to get to a bowl game, what it's like to actually finish with a winning season. Man, I tell you what, you're still playing in a very stacked part of the Big Ten. I mean, this year alone, you're going to Michigan, you're going to Penn State, you're hosting Ohio State, you're hosting Michigan State, which is coming off a New Year's Six win. But stringing together the wins that they should win and winning the games that they need to build upon, I mean, you're looking at a schedule where you've got winnable games hosting Rutgers, a winnable game at Indiana, a winnable game hosting Purdue, going to the road at Charlotte, which is an interesting choice. But you've got games that can easily get you into that bowl contention. I think I'll have to have what you're having if we're going to be talking about championships. But Mike Loxley, I think, especially knowing what Randy Etzel had left behind at Maryland and what previous administrations had finished at Maryland to kind of get them into this, you know, long losing streak, absence of bowls, and Mike Loxley actually turning them around to get them victories. I think this is definitely an opportunity to build on Maryland. I'm not going to buy in just yet into championships, but I will be very, very excited to see what they do on the gridiron this year. All right. Thank you for that, JR. Let's go ahead. I'm looking at Guaquito right now. Let's go ahead and add you up on here. And whenever you are ready to go, how are you doing tonight,
I'm friend? Doing very good. I got a question out here right now. I just graduated from University of South Carolina. Over on
Go Cox.
Go Cox. Always funny. Always will be funny. Over under win total 6.5. You go through that schedule. You see Arkansas at home. You see a weak Florida team. You see a Kentucky team that's got a lot of hype. I mean, what do we think is plausible, and what makes it a good season for us?
You know, one of the things I had missed about not having the call-in shows is we hadn't had our faithful South Carolina callers calling in to talk about the Cox. And good to get back into that rhythm. You know, looking at the schedule, I'm thinking it kind of depends really on how some of these other teams that are especially bringing in new staff that have had some turnover, how they shake out. You know, you mentioned Florida. Clemson's had a lot of turnover, losing offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator both. So I think that there's a solid – I put them at 6.5 wins, and then the rest of it kind of depends on how some of the other teams on their schedule do.
And
if that makes sense.
No, I mean it does. I mean, I feel like there's so much toss up, but the fact that, you know, in this AP polling, we're polling at, you know, 49 is in my mind absolutely criminal and awful. it's disgusting to see, to be honest.
Well, hey, listen, first and foremost, I mean, we've had Shane Beamer on the show. We would run through a wall for that guy after talking everything with him on how he approaches his program, how he approaches hiring assistants, and how he shapes young guys. And I absolutely love everything that he has brought to that program. And when you say, you know, you're looking at 6.5 games, I would take that over. And I would take that predominantly because you're going to have those opportunities to win. You're going to host Charlotte. You're going to host Missouri. You're going to go play Vanderbilt, quite frankly. You're going to have a game against South Carolina State. That would be your FCS tune-up game. And I'm pretty confident that South Carolina is going to be able to steal at least one game out of, you know, take your variety of Arkansas, Kentucky, Florida, which is still going to be a little bit of an unknown with Billy Napier as the head coach down there. But yeah. I definitely will take
How about that Tennessee game, too? And I mean, is it a year where we see a Clemson upset one time? Just to make me feel good.
As a treat.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that, for me, looking at that combo of Kentucky, Missouri, Florida, and Tennessee, I think South Carolina wins at least one of those, has a good chance at winning two of those. If things go right, maybe three.
And of course,
Clemson, and then Clemson, A&M, and Georgia are all toss-ups, and maybe Arkansas less so. I have a little bit more faith in Arkansas than I do that first group of four.
No, I mean, and there's all respect to Arkansas and what they're building out there, but you go through that schedule and I'm goddamn delusional. I could see 9 wins in there.
Listen, I'm not sure if I can see 10 wins for South Carolina, but if you're going to ask me, do they make a bowl game? Do they make a bowl game that is winnable? I will buy into that 100% headed into this season. Friend, we have appreciated you coming on, talking about South Carolina. We got some other folks in queue. Let's go ahead and bring some up. Thank you again for coming up, and go Cox.
Go Cox.
All right, Parker, I know that you have been patiently waiting. Come on aboard. What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, so I'm a big Colorado Buffaloes fan, a rarity given our recent history. But with all this realignment talk, a lot of like editorial, you know, writers and a lot of fans and speculators have been talking about how Colorado is somewhat in the driver's seat for either pushing us towards the Big 12. And then some people also laugh about our ability to move towards the Big 10. But my question to you guys is, you know, what keeps the Colorado Buffaloes from actually being a Big 10 candidate school? You know, if there was like an expansion and you were going to consider schools like Oregon and Washington, why not bring in a school like Colorado to bridge that gap? And then we also have that regional rivalry with Nebraska that goes way back. And I think it has a little more hatred than anyone that Nebraska currently plays in the Big Ten. So thoughts on that?
All right. Well, first and foremost, definitely want to say Folsom Field is one of my favorite college stadiums in the entire country. If you have not had an opportunity to see a Ralphie run, that is one of the most majestic things that you will ever see in any college football setting. And then, of course, if you're out in Boulder and you get to go experience Folsom Field for yourself, strongly recommend it on any college football fan's bucket list. Now, that being said, I think one of the biggest issues that you've got with Colorado going into the Big Ten is not necessarily going to be anything like, you know, academics or regional footprint or anything else that other teams would be eschewed from. But I think one of the big issues that Colorado is going to have is, you know, it has been a while since Colorado has been relevant and driven eyeballs to their watching. It's been a while since they've been able to kind of draw that audience in to their games to give them really that TV or streaming value, which the Big Ten decided to go with the Los Angeles market, with a brand like USC, with a brand like UCLA. I mean, heck, the reason that they brought Rutgers way back when into the Big Ten was because it was supposed to deliver them the New York media market. Right now, Colorado, I don't think brings in that type of TV money where it brings in that dollar ad to the Big Ten. Right now, we've kind of seen that the Big Ten is probably going to stand pat unless Notre Dame decides, hey, we're going to make more money in the Big Ten than we will with independents. And then after that, maybe we might be able to see something with an Oregon, a Washington, or any other school move into the Big Ten. But I think one of the other reasons that we're also going to see, even just beyond televisions and eyeballs, I think one of the other reasons is the more recent history has always been with the Big 12. So I think that's always been one of the key arguments of, you know, what would make more sense if all dollars are being equal. If you're going to do a defection from the Pac-12 and you're going to look for more stability, I could understand the arguments of why the two Arizona schools, Utah and Colorado, would all return back to the Big 12, as opposed to some conglomeration of, you know, Washington, Oregon, Colorado and Notre Dame joining the Big 10, for instance. You could say the same argument with Cal, with Stanford, or any other argument like that. But I think right now, unless Colorado is bringing in those bigger eyeballs, they're not going to be looked at by one of those big two power two conferences that are really kind of just trying to raid on that right now. Cirrus, what are your thoughts on all this?
I'll actually take a slightly different angle at it. I think that, unfortunately, this is what makes it really frustrating if you're a fan of a team like Colorado, is that I think that your future in terms of, you know, if you have to, if the Pac-12 falls apart, if you have to go somewhere else, your future, you're not really in the driver's seat, because I think it's going to come down to dance partners. And unless you're in a media market or you're the type of program that's going to generate the interest, the eyeballs, the dollar figure by adding them onto a conference, then it all comes down to who you pair up with. So that's why we hear so much talk about Oregon and Washington going together, or Stanford being paired with Notre Dame. You know, Notre Dame, as you mentioned, is the big fish out there, the white whale, that if somebody can ever land, that that's going to be a huge driving factor in all of this. So then if you're not one of those schools that either has, you know, combined, like we see with Portland, Seattle, that kind of media market power, or a natural fit Stanford, Notre Dame, then you're kind of stuck relying on whatever happens with somebody else. That if another team makes a move, can you piggyback onto that in a way that makes sense and makes this a natural progression for you to change conferences? So Colorado has historical ties to both the Big 12 and the Big 10, well, or at least to certain members like Nebraska, and in ways makes geographic sense. But they're not just not going to offer that mini market. They're not going to offer the prestige that some of these others do. So they're going to be stuck in that awkward position of having to play on the receiving end of, you know, hurry up and wait and see whatever happens with somebody else. Just kind of how I'm seeing it.
Could I ask one more follow-up question real quick then?
Yes, please, please.
Would you say that a couple breakout years could completely flip the tables? I'm not seeing it right now. I don't predict it happening anytime soon. You know, that I've been ground, you know, after 2016 being the only successful year after so long, I don't think I see it happening overnight. But if they had some crazy freak, you know, 10 win seasons, could they come right back into the national discussion? And would that change the complete, like, image of the program?
I mean, listen, certainly, if there's any program, I mean, you can name it as a Colorado, you could name it as an Arizona State, you can name it as a Wake Forest, even. If someone comes out and they win, you know, they get to the playoffs three consecutive years, which is already pretty dang difficult to do anyway, they'll get a little bit more control on where they go with their own conference realignment. Now, granted, you're still going to have the intangibles. You're still going to have geography. You're still going to have eyeballs. But, I mean, look at the way that TCU got into the Big 12 once upon a time ago. They didn't get in because, oh, well, we're in DFW. That was a added bonus. It was because they played good football. We saw something similar with UCF. We've seen similar with Cincinnati. And we will definitely see it if, you know, Colorado comes out in the next 3 years and suddenly wins three Pac-12 titles and they're going, you know, 11-1 or undefeated and winning huge bowl games, I mean, they would definitely get some kind of attention in that regard. Of course, you're still going to have your intangibles. It's going to matter about eyeballs. It's going to matter about resources. It's going to matter about the infrastructure and the willingness to invest. But definitely, if you saw any kind of team tear it up like that, they would definitely get a lot more bidding power wherever they go with realignment.
Yep. I think you can actually look at the Pac-12 and who some potential additions might be, and you see that exact same kind of mentality at work. Boise State's not getting thrown up on the list because of the huge media market that you get in Idaho. And San Diego State's in a decently sized area. They bring in some of that Southern California viewership, but they're probably not getting discussed if they haven't been consistently putting up good football seasons and also have some other sports that have done relatively well historically. So it's got to be both, unless you just happen to luck out and you are in an absolutely massive media market, kind of like Rutgers was once upon a time.
Cool. Thank you.
Yes, sir. We appreciate it. It is about the 9:30 mark right now. Just a reminder, you are listening to RCFB Talk 56. It's a call-in show tonight. We're listening to your calls. We're wanting to talk about what you want to talk about. So make sure that you go ahead and hit that request button in the bottom left-hand portion of the app. We want to talk to you tonight. Of course, we've got a couple of people queued up. And Gav, you are next up on the list. What is on your mind tonight, friend?
Oh, I was going to ask y'all, I'm an Arkansas fan. I was going to ask y'all, what do y'all think Arkansas' record is going to be?
Arkansas' record, I am very confident in them making another bowl game this year. I'm very confident in Sam Pittman continuing to build up the work that he's already done. But I also got to tell you, that schedule, oof, that is a stacked schedule for this upcoming year, man. I mean, you're starting off with Cincinnati. That's your first game. You know, this recent college football playoff participant is coming to Arkansas to start off your season. And then you've got other challenging games. I mean, y'all are playing at Provo against BYU. Man, that is a hard schedule on top of what's going to be an SEC West slugfest to begin with. If I had to be a betting man, I'd still take, you know, very solidly Arkansas is making a bowl game. Arkansas is finishing with a winning record at the end of the year. But oof, that's a that is a difficult schedule to chomp down on if you're a Razorbacks fan this year.
That is an uncommonly difficult out-of-conference schedule for an SEC team with Cincinnati, Missouri State, which, you know, that's as much of a cupcake as you're going to get on this schedule, and then BYU and Liberty, both of whom have had very, very strong seasons in recent years.
Yeah, because my personal opinion, I think we could be 8-win or 9-win or 10-win season team. Because last year our record was worse because we had to play Georgia, the best team in America last year, instead of South Carolina. And this year it's South Carolina.
Absolutely. And I mean, we mentioned it a little bit earlier. I mean, that's the stretch game for South Carolina to try to prove a statement. But you're going to have an advantage in this game because you're going to be playing that game in Arkansas. You've got Sam Pittman building up upon a really strong program with a really strong identity. He's already gotten that beautiful Mark Stoops type contract of you make a bowl, you get an extended year. And I really do like what he's got in front of him. But of course, I mean, I think the biggest questions are, of course, you know, Alabama is going to be Alabama. You've got your tough outs in BYU and Cincinnati. And then when you look at the rest of the schedule, what is Lane Kiffin going to do at Mississippi this year without Matt Corral? What is LSU going to look like with Brian Kelly at the helm? What does Auburn look like when Brian Harsin might possibly be coaching for his job, whether his on-field results warrant that or not? I think it's still going to be incredibly challenging for Arkansas just because of how difficult that out-of-conference scheduling is, and you got to play in the SEC West. But we'll have to see how Sam Pittman pulls it off, because if there's any one coach that I go, yeah, I think he's got it, it's going to be what Pittman is building out there in Fayetteville.
Yeah, I like what he's doing. All right, thank you for letting me talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. I'm going to go ahead and get into our next folks on the queue. Miller, looks like you are going to be up here next. What is on your mind?
Yeah, staying in the SEC West, my expectations for Auburn this year are already low, and I still think I'm going to be disappointed. What's your outlook on the season for the Tigers?
I think first and foremost, if there's not a coaching coup to try to fire Brian Harsin, that is a victory. Now, if Brian Harsin is, you know, going 4-8 and you got the big wigs trying to do whatever they want to do, that's one thing. But I think as long as you don't have some kind of odd coup where, you know, you're accusing him of sleeping with a secretary and lying on applications, and you don't have any of that kind of circus going around you with Auburn, that is a winning season, just straight off the bat, more than anything else. Cirrus, what are you thinking about when it comes to the Auburn targets?
I'm curious to see if Auburn has finally broken the old even year Auburn, odd year Auburn cycle that they were stuck in under Malzahn, if that went with him out the door, and how they're going to do this year. We talked about James Franklin. We've got Penn State on the schedule for Auburn this year as an out-of-conference game. Again, another kind of like marquee out-of-conference game for an SEC team coming in week three, mid-September. So that's going to be at Auburn. Be interesting to see how those two programs do. They're going to have a little bit of time to kind of get things tuned up a little bit before going into that one. So I think that's probably going to be the tone setter for their season. Because then it's, you know, Missouri, LSU, Georgia, Ole Miss, and it's a pretty tough grind through the middle part of that schedule. And, of course, they're finishing with Alabama at the Iron Bowl in late November. So there's not a whole lot of time to catch their breath once they hit the meat of the schedule, all the way up until they get to their tune-up game against Western Kentucky.
And then, of course, I think the other interesting for Auburn is they've lost both of their coordinators. So Mike Bobo out as offensive coordinator, Eric Kearsaw promoted up to offensive coordinator. Defensive coordinator, you've got Jeff Schmetting in as your DC, of course, with Derek Mason deciding to take a pay cut to go to Oklahoma State as the defensive coordinator. I'm going to be very curious to see how these two coordinators come in and take over this program, how they get a program buy-in, not just from their players and teaching scheme, but also from the boosters as well. If we know anything else, Auburn's boosters somehow always make themselves the story, no matter what year it is. But I think if you're able to corral that, get some kind of success and build a foundation beyond, you know, trying to run Brian Harsin out of town, I think that's a really solid win in terms of a season when it comes to the Auburn Tigers.
You mentioned Derek Mason leaving and all of the hubbub around Brian Harsin. That's not exactly a vote of confidence when your defensive coordinator takes a pay cut just to get out of town. So, you know, if the defense struggles this year, especially early on, then you kind of have to wonder if the boosters start getting a little extra, you know, rambunctious, because they might smell some blood in the water and something they can pin on Harsin.
For sure. I don't see the boosters changing their mind from the offseason, so I fully expect them to try and get rid of him again this year. Anything less than 8 or 9 wins, I'd expect a lot of noise from them. Wasn't exactly sad to see Mike Bobo go. I think that was needed. But Derek Mason definitely didn't feel good to lose him.
So let's say, you know, if Auburn does end up deciding to go into a new coaching search, what would you describe as your ideal candidate to be coaching the Auburn Tigers?
That's a good question. I know they wanted Venables when they ended up getting Harsin. That would have been a great hire. I don't know who wants to step into Auburn to have to deal with the booster situation and the pressure there is to win and competing against Nick Saban and Kirby Smart every single year. So that's a tough ask. I don't know. Don't have an answer for you.
I mean, I think at least when it comes to Auburn, obviously the boosters are going to booster no matter what. But I think more than anything else, the opportunity for someone to come in and kind of control that narrative a little bit more, have a couple of skins on the wall, is definitely going to be beneficial to Auburn. I don't know if you could pull off the coup necessarily, but if you got someone like a Lane Kiffin to come over one over state, I think that would be a slam dunk hire if you're going to go for something like that. But of course, like we said before, I think if anything else, you have the stability of Brian Harsin gets that 8-win season. He's able to calm the waters a little bit. Boosters don't try to throw off some kind of coup I think that's going to be the best type of winning opportunity for the Auburn Tigers this year.
JD, you mentioned trying to control those boosters a little bit if they do have to go out and get a new coach. Kind of reminds me about what we heard from John Talty last week, talking about Nick Saban coming in at Alabama and kind of laying out what the law was going to be for the boosters.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
You know, being able to say, this is our goal, this is what we're going to do, this is what I want you to do, and this is what you're absolutely not allowed to have any say in whatsoever. And being able to enforce his will on the big money donors to kind of keep that all contained and under control so that he was able to get the most out of them and actually make progress towards program goals instead of just individual goals.
Most certainly. You know what, Miller, thank you so much for hopping on board. Appreciate being able to talk about the Auburn Tigers. Hope you have a fantastic evening. I know that we've got a couple people coming up on cue. I see Gamecock Superman. We brought you up on here. I see that hand raised, sir. Go Cox to you. And how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing all right, and thank you for having me on. Obviously, I'm a Gamecock fan, but I'm pretty much worn out all my talking about the Gamecocks this offseason. I'm just ready to watch some football. But one story that was interesting this week was sort of the situation with Caleb Gundy at Oklahoma that I'd sort of like to talk about. You know, my question to you guys is, do you think it was fair for them to fire Caleb Gundy over this, you know, alleged incident with him reading a player's iPad and it having, you know, a racial slur on it? And second of all, do you think this is going to negatively impact Brent Venables, you know, program and or, you know, their recruiting effort in the future?
I'll start by saying that, you know, yeah, I think that he probably violated at least one of the terms of his contract or their employment handbook, and they had the grounds to either ask him to resign, you know, give him some options, or force him out if they had to. Obviously, he is no longer employed by Oklahoma, so the grounds were there in some form or fashion. Whether or not it was warranted, I'm going to go with probably, because that's not exactly something you just kind of give up for no reason after being there for, what, 20-odd years on that staff. And the fact that he did kind of speaks a lot to it. I don't think we're ever going to get the full unbiased details because every party wants to kind of put this in the best light when they make their statements. I did think it was pretty telling when Venables had to come out and kind of clarify after Gundy had released his statement and kind of, you know, potentially soft played it that, okay, well, maybe there was a little bit more going on than what had been portrayed to the public. You know, it wasn't just saying something once, it was multiple times. Wasn't just a single slip of the tongue kind of thing. Momentary, you know, loss of judgment. But as far as how it impacts the team going forward, whether he stayed or whether he left, it was going to impact, you know, this was going to be something that other teams were going to pull up in negative recruiting. And that's just the way that the game's played. They were going to throw that out there of, you know, do you really want to go play for a team where, you know, they got coaches throwing out, you know, racial language? Or do you want to go to a team where head coach doesn't know what he's doing and, you know, he's firing guys that have been there for a long time that the players loved? Or do you want to come somewhere with more stability?
Yeah, and I mean, one aspect I think that is makes this sort of interesting is that Caleb Gundy, you know, he's held a lot of positions at Oklahoma, but he has been one of their best recruiters, right? I mean, he's been connected to the program. Obviously, Oklahoma is a blue blood program. It doesn't take, you know, an elite recruiter to get good players at Oklahoma. But it's just interesting to see this sort of situation, you know, play out where there could be, you know, some attrition in the locker room now. You know, some players may disagree with Venables. You know, they may have forgiven Gundy for what he did. Some players may agree with Venables and like what he did. So it's just I don't think it's a very good way to start out your you know, program or your tenure at Oklahoma. But that's just my two cents on it.
Oh, I'll firmly agree with you on that. And, like, for me, one of the things that Cirrus had kind of mentioned is we're probably never going to get the full story because, sure, he might have violated something in his handbook, but it's very, very, very difficult for me to believe that, you know, a guy who's been there for 23 years is one of the biggest pillars of stability for a first-year head coach. Is going to get released or resign or be even asked to leave for pulling a Ron Burgundy, essentially. Pulling something out, saying something that he shouldn't have. If you have it as a one-time thing, as an accident, yeah, maybe that violates a handbook. But something tells me, in at least the first rebuttal statement that Brett Venables had to give out saying that there was repeated uses of the word, that really leans to me that there is something significantly more to the situation than what was just originally announced. No matter what's going to happen, I don't think that this was just a one-time, oops, that was an accident, we need you to go now. There was something else that led to that in order to make that type of change. And of course, Brett Venables, he's not a dumb guy. He knows what he's looking for in a coaching staff. He knows how to coach a championship team with the amount of time that he spent at Clemson. And especially if you're looking at one of those old hands who knows a program, who knows how to recruit to that area, you're not going to release him just because of a one-time incident. It either had to be a really bad one-time incident, or it had to be other things that were leading up, and that ended up being the flashpoint. How that affects Oklahoma in the long term, I think that'll get to be seen, especially if, you know, Brent Venables comes out here and turns out another 11-win season or something along those lines. But I think overall, what Cirrus said was absolutely accurate, and we're never going to get that whole story. And until we do, I think I lean a little bit more towards Venables and Oklahoma's side than I do Cale Gundy's side.
Well, do you think there's any merit to, you know, what Caleb Gundy's daughter came out and said? Obviously, you know, people have seen the screenshots of the tweet. She basically said, like, you know, Brent Venables is lying about what happened. He basically just wanted to get rid of Gundy because he didn't want Gundy there in the first place. And the administration of the school probably did want him there. And I mean, if you're looking at that and you think there's merit to that claim, if there is friction between the administration and the leader of the football program, that's already not a good thing.
Daughter defends father, more at 11. But on a more serious note, I mean, we've saw the same thing at Baylor with Briles family defending Art. We've seen it with Urban Meyer's family. Family members stick up for the one that's in trouble, whether it's merited or not. I think you can kind of just expect that. You know, if Venables didn't want him there, he brought in a new staff. He could have just not retained him. So for some reason, he wanted to keep Gundy around, and then something has changed. And Gundy himself admitted that there was an incident that provided at least the veneer of a reason to let him go. So unfortunately for Venables, he's kind of stuck in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, where he's going to catch it from every side of, you know, second guessing that decision. And the only real way to deal with it would be if he were to totally air out the dirty laundry, which is going to create its own negative PR that he would have to deal with on the recruiting trail if he did. So, you know, I think it's one of those where he's just got to hope that he puts together a good season and it all blows over. But as far as the daughter statement, it's kind of what I would expect her to say, expect most family members to say. You have to really, really screw up if your own family members are coming out and saying, nope, he totally deserved it. He got what was coming to him.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. That's really all I got right now. I thought that was an interesting situation, you know, to talk about one of the more interesting developments this week in college football. But I appreciate you guys having me on.
Hey, we appreciate you coming on here. And of course, anytime you see you know, a longtime assistant leaves or is dismissed right at the start of training camp with just a couple of weeks to go before games, that's always going to be a very, very fascinating conversation to have. So Gamecock Superman, thank you for coming up. Super, super appreciate you coming up and speaking with us for a little bit. We've got about 10 minutes left remaining. So if you want to go ahead and get on here and get your call in, we want to hear about it. And until then, you know, Cirrus, I saw one thing that I absolutely love seeing. The Pony Express officially back at SMU, announcing this $3.5 million collective, which will effectively come out to, I think it's a little over 30 grand per player. I think one of my favorite comments that I saw on it was from an SMU fan saying, NIL, now it's legal.
That's quite the backronym there. Definitely fits in with the Pony Express, Pony Excess days. You know, I really think that the worst part about this, though, is the fact that there are no more Trans-Ams, right? Like, they need to bring that back.
Yes.
We need to revitalize the Trans-Am. Luckily, I will say that if you go on eBay Motors, not sponsored, but, you know, if you guys want to, just give us a call. There are currently some Pontiac Trans-Ams that you can get for less than $30,000. It gets a little trickier if you want it in good shape, you know, running, and also you are going to lose a fair amount of that $30,000 to various taxes. So there's a pretty nice one, you know, black with the hood emblem and everything on it for $17,600, you know. So just something to consider if you're an SMU player and you want to get the full college experience of Pony Express.
I think it's also really interesting to see all of these other collectives popping up. USC, I think another one in a very fascinating case. We saw some donors who, against school and program wishes, decided to go ahead and start up their own fund to help effectively give a starter salary to players on the team. And I think one thing that I'm highly curious to know about is, what are these coaches perspectives on these collectives and paying players and making sure that these guys have some kind of income coming in? Because I know Lane Kiffin has been very outspoken about it at Ole Miss of, hey, you pay me and you also pay my players. What happens when I say I don't want to pay that player or I don't want to recruit that player? What ultimately happens for this football program and what kind of vision that we're going to have to push forward with? I'm sure if you're a program like an SMU where you're starting to lean hard into it, you've got Eric Dickerson and Craig James back on those graphics again, and you're leaning hard into your history. That's one thing. But if you're a program like a USC, and you're trying to recruit players that will fit a Lincoln Riley scheme and play the players that you want to play, I'm very interested to know what those thoughts are going to be for those coaches who are now having to deal with essentially, you know, people that they can't control paying the guys that they want to control.
Yeah, and I mean, there's all kinds of issues that brings up in terms of, you know, program control, program objectives. But also, you know, from an NCAA compliance side, this has to be just an absolute headache, because there are some NIL rules. You know, it's not supposed to be pay for play. It's not supposed to be linked to performance. At the same time, like, they actually have to do something in order to get that NIL money. I mean, at least in theory, you know, they can't just show up for practices and, you know, be on the roster and get their 30 grand. They have to do something to be compensated. Whether that's, you know, a booster saying, oh yeah, you know, you come by my business and you've earned your $30,000. That seems like you're going to dig yourself in a hole pretty fast. And the NCAA is going to start looking. Whether or not they have the teeth to do anything about it is a totally different matter.
Yeah, and then, of course, on top of that, you've got all these states when, you know, California had set the standard of saying we're going to pass an NIL rule. There's a lot of other rules that are just kind of hodgepodge between individual states of what's legal and what's not with NIL. And that's going to leave a lot of different interpretations from state to state to state to state. It's going to be a really interesting time to see these coaches kind of put together these collectives with their players, with their administrations, and really try to get the best product on the field that they want in a way that they wouldn't necessarily do it way back when. I mean, I remember when we spoke with Bo Pelini a couple of shows ago, he was talking about things that have so dramatically changed since he was the head coach at Nebraska or even Youngstown State. And he was saying where he wasn't sure that it was for the better with these new rules and with less oversight. I mean, you're going to have to correct me on this one. Did he call the NCAA rats? Or did he call them scumbags? What was the specific term that he used when he was talking about his disdain for the NCAA back then?
It was colorful, but he did manage to keep it PG-13, which was kind of impressive, given the reputation he has. You know, not exactly being a calm guy. Retirement is definitely probably helping his blood pressure, I feel like.
Well, anyway, though, we have about 5 minutes remaining with our talk. So if anybody wants to come up and be our final caller, we would love to hear from you. You can hit that button in the bottom left-hand corner to request to come on up. We'd love to hear your thoughts about anything happening in the college football sphere. And I do see somebody up right now. So, Cuban, why don't you go on up here? Tell us what's on your mind this evening to help close us out. You're on the air.
Oh, hey there. How's it going? So, yeah, one of the questions I had was, as a Michigan State fan, you know, you hear a lot about Mel Tucker recruiting well and stuff, but there's not nearly as much money at MSU as there is Texas or, you know, some of those bigger football schools. For the common, you know, kind of good program like MSU that's definitely nowhere near the top echelon, how active are they with NIL, or is it really just the local businesses that are chipping in here and there to help the kids?
I think it's going to really depend on program to program of who's going to be paying those NIL bills. If you're something like, you know, you're a mom and pop and you want to put out, you know, a couple hundred bucks here or there, you'll certainly be doing that. If you're a major corporation, you're probably going to go where your CEO is an alma mater at. You're probably going to do something that someone in the high ups in the C-suite either graduated from or is really close to. You might even do something. I know that the corporate owners of Runza out in Nebraska did a huge deal for all Nebraska student athletes because they wanted to be known with their chains throughout the state of Nebraska. We had a similar deal with BYU as well. I think it was a nutrition bar company that had come out and made sure that every single player, regardless of whether they were on scholarship or not, had some form of money in order to have walking around money to pay tuition. We've even seen stuff with Miami of, you know, we've had guys who have made money in crypto and said, we're going to be able to pay all of our guys whatever we want. And it's because we have ties to Miami. We're business people in Miami. And we want to support that. Now, where that turns in for Michigan State, I will be quick to admit, I don't know the business atmosphere at Michigan State enough to properly say, you know, who is coming in with NIL, where that plays out. But I can definitely say they've got the money if they've got Mel Tucker on that long extended contract with all that guaranteed money behind it.
Yeah, and that is a good point. And the donor that we have is Matt Ishbia. And, you know, he puts together some of those like $500 a month, you know, kind of stipends for the athletes and stuff. But a follow-up to that would be, do you see coaches like him being able to recruit at, you know, he's not like Saban or anything right now, but he's getting, you know, 10 4-stars for the next class already. And do you see going forward with those huge NIL collectives that Texas and USC are getting, do you see him being able to recruit at the same level, assuming that we don't get those huge collectives?
Money matters, but at the same time, your highest starred athletes are also looking at their chances of making it to the NFL. NIL money is great. Quinn Ewers made a lot of money when he went to Ohio State for a season, but it pales in comparison to long-term career earnings for those guys who are able to make it to the pros. And that's kind of been the whole thing about NIL, is that it gives some of these athletes who aren't going to be able to have a pro career or who play in a sport that either is more Olympic focused or that, you know, has like gymnastics, they're not really able to do college and then go into more of a professional aspect. You know, their competitive time is when they're in their mid to late teens. Gives them a chance to rake in some of that sponsorship money while they're at their most valuable. And it helps those guys out some. we're going to hear about the big deals with, you know, guys like Quinn Ewers, to use that example again. But at the same time, the NIL money is really going to make a difference with those players who are like a step lower on the totem pole. So I think that if Mel Tucker can prove that he can develop players, he can get them into the NFL, that they're going to be able to win games, and that he has roster spots for them. Because that's the other thing. There's a reason why not every single blue chip goes to Alabama. You can only play so many guys at once. There's only one football. So if he's able to do that and manage his team properly, then I think you'll still see him be able to bring in talent and stay competitive. Because at the end of the day, that's all that the NIL money is good for, is helping to retain some players and to get kids in the door. That's not going to win you games. There's a lot of adages about talent and hard work, and to an extent, they are all true. Mel Tucker is not going to win games just because he, you know, has $30 million worth of NIL money for his roster. And it's all going to come down to how he does as a coach to coach those guys up, put them into positions where they can win and excel, and also the track record he can establish with their ability to make it into the pros and get those big money contracts. So I don't think that the size of your NIL collective is going to be the determining factor. Just like the size of your stadium hasn't been for some of these teams. And it's just another factor that goes into this. But at the end of the day, you still have to be able to win games.
Yeah, that makes sense. Appreciate your answer. Thanks.
Appreciate you, Cuban. Well, thank you all so much for coming out and joining us for a call-in show. It's been quite a while since we've been able to have one of these. We typically try to host these on Tuesday nights, but of course, we've just had such a stellar lineup of reporters, college football coaches, athletic directors, executives from throughout the sport, and we have several more in the barrel coming up over the next couple of weeks. We are excited about college football finally happening this month, and we are excited to have all of you joining us as we head into the season. So for Sirius and myself, JD Moore, this has been Reddit CFB Talk 56. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm a hang up and listen.